Thank you, Craig, and all my groupies. It's good. Good morning. How's everyone doing? You keeping cool? It's been quite hot this week and humid. Disgusting, really. I hate summer. Wow. Hi. I feel like it's been a while since I've been up here, but it's good. I really enjoyed this morning's worship. In fact, Davinia almost stole my message. She's like speaking out, and so I think it's very clear that God's saying something to us this morning, which is exciting. So the title of my message this morning is The Main Course. Kind of like dinner. You know, when you go to dinner, you have entree, main course, dessert. Well, mine is the main course. There's two types of people in this world. Those that like cats and those that like dogs. I'm personally a dog person, not a huge fan of cats. But when I lived at home, we had a dog named Snowball and a cat named Fluffy. This is our dog, Snowball. He's no longer with us. He's in doggy heaven. But he was a Samoyed cross golden retriever. So he was like this white, fluffy, playful little thing. He wasn't little at all, as you can see. He was very social, loved to just climb on our lap, thought he was a lap dog, despite the fact that he weighed a ton and would crawl up onto seats and stuff, would want to get in bed with you, like everything. He basically thought he was human. We loved Snowball. He was great. And then we had a cat named Fluffy. Now, this isn't actually my cat because we didn't have a photo of my cat. But this is kind of what my cat looked like. It was pretty much similar to this, maybe had a little bit more white on it, but it was like this orange tabby cat. And we got Fluffy when I was really, really young. Like, I think it would have only been like about 5 or 6. And I remember, like, we had this, like a naming ceremony. I don't know if you with parents kind of, you get a pet and your kids get to name it. Well, Jared, my brother, he had this, like, soft sheepskin thing that he called Fluffy. So for some reason, he got to pick what we named our cat, and he picked Fluffy, which obviously he's not a very fluffy cat at all. So we got him when I was really young, and I remember being young and he would be around the house and stuff, and I remember like feeding him and petting him and, you know, kind of like hanging out and stuff. But then when I became a teenager and Fluffy got older as well, I remember hardly ever seeing him. Like, he would just kind of go off roaming the streets and getting into cat fights and stuff. And he would only come home when he needed something. So when he needed food, or basically food, that was it. And as I got older, I remember I just really began to see Fluffy as really selfish. I remember just going, who do you think you are? Like, here we are as your owners, providing you with shelter and food and water and love if you want it. And he just didn't care. He didn't care about us at all. It would be like days between us seeing him. Sometimes it would be like, has Fluffy like run away? Like, we haven't seen him in a week. But then he would come kind of strolling back and wanting food and stuff. And I remember the only one that he really actually gave any time to was my brother Jared. Mind you, this was quite reluctant, as Jared would basically force him to have cuddles. And Fluffy would be there laying in Jared's lap and his ears would be down and his tail would be just swishing in that agitated, like, get off me kind of way. And so by the time I was like in my late teens, Fluffy and me weren't exactly best friends. I didn't really have a lot of time for him. We didn't hang out at all. And I remember my mum, she bought this magnet that said, my dog thinks he's human and my cat thinks he's God. And I was like, yeah, that's so true of our pets. Because Fluffy would just like walk around like he owned the joint, you know, like he was just the king of everything and didn't care about us. And around the age of 20, every time we saw Fluffy, he had like a new scratch or like something wrong with him. And I'm thinking, oh, he's just getting old, you know. He's, by this time, he's probably about 13 or 14 human years, if you call it cat years, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, he must just be, like, losing his touch with, like, the cat gangs. You know, like all the other cats are, like, ganging up on him and beating him up and stuff, and he's just not fighting anymore. And anyway, I remember, like, it had been a few days since we'd seen him, and then he came round to the house and he kind of started losing, like, clumps of hair. So he had, like, these semi-bald patches over him, which wasn't very nice. And then he had this like sore on the side of his face. It sounds really disgusting, but he had this sore on the side of his face. I was kind of like, what is that? Like, did he just get like bitten by a cat or something? And then one day I noticed that he wasn't really walking straight. Like, he would kind of walk around and just sort of fall over. So anyway, I remember saying to Mum, it sounds horrible, we do not neglect our animals, okay? It's it's kind of funny when you think about it. Anyway, I'm sorry if you love cats. So it kind of got to a point where I was like, Mum, I think we need to take Fluffy to the vet. Like, there's clearly something wrong with him. And it turned out that he actually had a tumour, like, in his ear behind his kind of area. And so that was causing him to lose his balance, and it was, like, affecting all these areas of his body. So it turned out we had to put Fluffy down just so he could be at peace. And I think really the only one that missed him was Jared. Like, everyone else was like, yeah. So I'm sorry, Craig and Dav. Craig and Dav have a beautiful cat. It's probably the only cat that I actually like. Seti, he's lovely. It's too late. We're over, I'm sorry. So we all kind of know there's a big difference between cats and dogs. Most cats, excluding Seti, obviously, are predominantly selfish animals, I think. Sorry for all you cat lovers. Whereas dogs are predominantly selfless. They just want to be around you. They just want to, like, spend time at your feet. And no matter how you treat them, they love you. It doesn't matter if you're mean to them or anything. They just love you. It's not about what you give them, but it's about the relationship that they have with you. And this is my dog, Maisie. Oh. I've got no reason to show this to you, but I just wanted to because... Because I love my dog, Maisie. She's really cute. She's a Cocker Spaniel Cross Labrador. So she's only like this big or something. But anyway, that's my dog. Anyway. So I'm talking about like cats. I want you to imagine with me for a moment what it would be like if the relationship that you had with one of your closest friends only functioned when you needed something. So you only called them or organised a hangout when you needed something from them. Maybe you needed them to babysit your kids, or maybe you wanted to borrow some clothes, or maybe you wanted like a small little loan on the side sort of thing. So imagine now if as parents, that's all your kids did. Now excuse me if you have teenagers, because I think that's all they do is come to you when they need something. It does get better the older they get, so don't worry. But imagine even as your kids do get older, the only time that they speak to you is when they need something. So imagine having a relationship like that with your husband or your wife, where you only communicate with the other one when you needed something. Or the only time you felt some inkling of relationship was when there was something required of you. So now imagine if your relationship was like that with Jesus, where the only time you came to him was when you needed something. I know when I imagine these things, I begin to look a lot like my cat Fluffy. And as I said, I'm not a huge fan of cats. So the last few months, I've been through a bit of self-evaluation when it comes to my relationship with God. And not just imagining what it would be like, but actually realising that that's kind of what it had become. That I'd got myself to a bit of a cat mentality, where it's only when I needed something that I would go to him. And this made me think of the Israelites in the Bible. And I'd like to look at a few situations that the Israelites found themselves in. So we're all pretty familiar with the story of the Israelites. It's found in the book of Exodus onwards, sort of thing, in the Old Testament. But here's a bit of context. The Israelites were God's chosen people, but they were enslaved by the Egyptians. God chose Moses to set the Israelites free from slavery and lead them into God's promised land for them. The Egyptian Pharaoh would not let the Israelites go, so God sent many plagues to the land of Egypt. And after the last plague, which was the death of all firstborn sons, Moses was able to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. But the Egyptians went after them, and yet God led the Israelites through the sea to safety, and the Egyptians drowned. Then Moses began to lead them towards the promised land. And this is where we pick it up. So in Exodus chapter 15, 22 to 24, it says, "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they travelled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, which was a source of water, they could not drink it because the water was bitter. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, 'What are we to drink?'" It was only 3 days that the Israelites had been following God, and yet they were already complaining. God had just freed them from years and years of slavery, and now they questioned how they were going to drink. So it goes on in chapter 16, verses 2 to 3. "In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." But the Lord then provided them with bread that fell from the sky. The Israelites got into a bit of a habit of only coming to God through Moses when they needed something. When they needed food or water, they went to God. In chapter 19, we see God give Moses the Ten Commandments, that the Israelites would follow these commandments. God spoke directly to the Israelites, and yet they didn't want to speak to God. They were happy to go through Moses as long as they got what they needed when they asked for it. Moses then spent another 40 days up on the mountain with God, whilst he was up there, the Israelites decided that they weren't getting what they needed anymore by worshipping God, so they made an idol. They made a gold statue of a calf and they worshipped this instead. And once again, the Israelites only went to God when they needed something. And once that need was met, they went and did whatever they wanted. After God dealt with the idolatry, he led them to build a tabernacle where the Israelites could worship him. God provided them with a cloud to follow during the day and a pillar of fire to follow at night. He continued to lead the Israelites to the promised land. And as we skip ahead to Numbers, we read in chapter 13 that they have reached the promised land, but it's currently inhabited by others. The Israelites don't think they can overcome this land. Numbers 14:2-3 says, "All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'Would that we have died in the land of Egypt, or would that we have died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword?'" You see, the Israelites had seen God's provision and protection over them ever since they left Egypt. They went to God whenever they needed something, and yet all God wanted was for them to trust him, for the Israelites to want to be in relationship with him. But instead, they were happy to rely on Moses to get what they needed from God. The Israelites were drawn to God by what he could give them, not by his presence. It was at this point that God became really angry and he led them back into the wilderness for another 40 years. Many of them would not see the promised land. So I realise this is quite a broad example. So here's an example in, I guess, a real life scenario. For the last couple of years, Ben and I, along with other staff members here at Hillside and some youth leaders, have attended the Hillsong Conference in Sydney. It takes place in the beginning of July each year, and every year I go, it's literally like a week-long spiritual feast for my soul. Each year has been a week of God just pouring so much into me, revitalizing and refreshing me spiritually, emotionally, mentally. And each year I've received words and encouragements that have been so timely, it's been incredible. I come back after each conference empowered and reminded of God's promises over my life. But last year, in 2014, Ben and I weren't able to attend Hillsong. And when the time came and went, I realised how much I was relying on that week-long conference to get me through the rest of the year. You see, I was willing to spend the money to go to Sydney to hear from God for a week because I needed it. I was willing to sit in on however many sessions and hear from different speakers because there were things that I needed to hear from God. But was I willing to make time in my everyday to hear from him? Was I willing to come to him even when I didn't need anything at all? Not really. Mind you, none of this was a conscious decision, but I was willing to neglect my relationship with Jesus until it started to affect me, until I needed something. I realised last year how much I was relying on conferences and church services to keep me going, to keep me equipped and empowered to do what it is he's asked me to do. And then I couldn't go to the conferences, and it's as though my spirit was drying up and I had nothing left to give. And then God spoke to me, and he helped me to see that although church feeds us and conferences fire us up and refresh us, it's if we're not resting in his presence, if we're not including Jesus and being led by his spirit each day, if we're not coming to him just because we can, not with an agenda or a to-do list, then we're not allowing him to be our strength. We're not allowing him to sustain us. We come for what we need and then we leave until we need something again. You see, this is exactly what the Israelites were doing. They were prepared to follow God while they were getting what they needed, but as soon as their needs were met, they had no time for him. They much preferred to do what they wanted and what they were comfortable with until they needed something again. So it got to November last year and the opportunity to go to Red Frogs came up. And if I was completely honest, I really didn't feel equipped to go and deal with thousands of drunk teenagers and speak to Jesus about them, to them. But in the lead up to going, I met with a friend and she said to me, "I believe you're going to be refreshed at Leavers Week." And I was like, "You mean I'm not going to be drained on every level? I was going to be refreshed." And then I found out that I was assigned to be chaplain support, which basically means that I was there to support, pray with and encourage the other Red Frog chaplains while they went out and ministered to all the kids. And I think it was the second day there that I was asked to lead a devotional. I was in the car with a group of Red Frog chaplains and they said to me, "Oh, can you do a devotional with us?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, when?" And they're like, "Oh, in like 10 minutes, like when we get to where we're going." And I was like, "Oh, 10 minutes, okay." So I'm like racking my brain trying to find what can I speak to these guys, what can I share with them that's going to be impacting and relevant to them. And I ended up sharing some snippets of messages that had impacted me in the months leading up to going. And I referenced the message that Jordan, the YFC International Director, spoke about last year. He talked about the Good Samaritan and having enough margin in your life to be able to minister to people and step into opportunities that God presents us with. I developed a little bit on this, on how to actually create margin in your life, and that it starts by simply coming to Jesus with all you have or don't have and dwelling in his presence. It was whilst I was sharing this simple message with the other chaplains that I realised how ironic it was for me to be sharing this message. That God was intending for me to hear this message as much as the people I was speaking to. It was that afternoon that I grabbed my Bible and a devotional book that I had with me and I just decided to go and sit with Jesus. And the devotional book that I had, I'd actually bought it a few months earlier but I hadn't opened it yet. And as I turned to the first page, it was a devotional about Mary and Martha. So I'd like to share this with you. The version I'm sharing is from The Message, and it's Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. It says, "As they continued their travel, Jesus entered a village. A woman by the name of Martha welcomed him and made him feel quite at home. She had a sister Mary who sat before the master, hanging on every word he said. But Martha was pulled away by all she had to do in the kitchen. Later, she stepped in, interrupting them. 'Master, don't you care that my sister has abandoned me to the kitchen? Tell her to lend me a hand.' The master said, 'Martha, dear Martha, you're fussing far too much and getting yourself worked up over nothing. One thing only is essential, and Mary has chosen it. It's the main course and won't be taken from her.'" So just before this passage in Luke, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And I had just spoken about that story with the people I was sharing with. It was very clear that God was trying to tell me something. You see, Martha had such eagerness to make Jesus feel at home. She was ready to leap into action by preparing him food, while her sister Mary did nothing to help. She just went and sat with Jesus. Now you can imagine this. Like, I think of what I'm like when we've got people coming over for dinner. I'm running around the house making it look all clean and tidy. I'm cooking in the kitchen and making sure all the food is ready. And when our guests get to our house, I'm usually still making final preparations in the kitchen, while Ben just chills on the couch with the guests. It's usually at this moment that I call Ben into the kitchen and have that quiet word with him. And in that like agitated whispering voice, all you women know what I'm talking about, you kind of ask, "Why aren't you doing anything to help me?" You know, you're trying to keep it quiet so they don't hear. So you can imagine Martha trying to get everything prepared for Jesus, and Mary is just chilling with him on the couch, hanging on his every word. It says Martha was pulled away by all she had to do in the kitchen. And instead of Mary helping her, she just continued to do nothing but sit with Jesus. So Martha storms out of the kitchen, thinking that she's the one doing the right thing, and says to Jesus, "Don't you care that my sister has abandoned the kitchen to me? Tell her to lend me a hand." Here Martha is thinking, "This will teach her. Now Jesus will tell her off for not doing anything, and she'll have to come and help me." But instead, Jesus says to Martha, Martha, you're fussing too much and getting yourself worked up over nothing. One thing only is essential and Mary has chosen it. It's the main course and it won't be taken from her. Jesus says Mary's choice is the one that is right. So what is Mary's choice? She would have known that there were things to be done, food to be prepared. And yet she chose to simply sit at the feet of Jesus and eagerly await what he had to say. And in this devotional, we asked a few questions, and I'd like to share these questions with you. The first one is it your presence or your performance that God values? Can a sense of obligation become confused with our identity? And what if, in your eagerness to accomplish, you have neglected relationship with God and others? What if you're missing the main course? Are you missing the main course in your life, church? Jesus is the main course. Only one thing is essential, and that's sitting at his feet. I was, of course, familiar with the story of Mary and Martha, and yet God was opening my eyes to how relevant this story was for my own life, because I'm such a Martha. I'm such a doer. I love to-do lists, and I love ticking things off my to-do lists. And in a culture of busyness being the norm, I got caught up in the cat mentality of so often going to God only when I needed something. Because I was too busy being a good worker and eagerly being ready to leap into action and accomplish all the things that I had to do. I was at a point where I was having to give out of my own strength because I wasn't relying on the Holy Spirit to strengthen me and sustain me. Reading this devotional was a humbling moment for me, one where it all became very clear that I was being like the Israelites. I was only coming to God when I needed him. I was relying on conferences and church alone to provide me with spiritual nourishment. I was getting caught up in all the tasks at hand and missing out on the main course of my life. I was neglecting my relationship with Jesus. And I believe this is something cultural in the church as well, where to actually stop and rest in the presence of the Almighty King almost seems to take more effort than continuing on with our busy lives and ticking off those to-do lists. So I want to look at three things that I think can cause us to neglect our time with Jesus. The first thing is our eagerness to accomplish. You know, we each have our own worlds to attend to. Our own spouses, families, children, jobs, housework, tasks. We are told, whatever you do, do unto the Lord. And striving to accomplish becomes our priority. Whether you work in a Christian environment or not, so often we claim to be doing the work that the Lord has given us, which is true, and yet we allow our identity to be found in our obligations rather than the one who gave us those tasks in the first place. Our eagerness to accomplish negates our soul's desire to sit with our Creator until we need something from him again. The second thing I think that can stop us from spending time with Jesus, is our perception of quality time. You know, in the years of being told about the importance of having quiet time with Jesus, some of us have bought into the idea that any quiet time can only happen when you've got an hour or two spare. We hear about those people that get up at 5 a.m. and spend two hours in the morning in the presence of Jesus, which is incredible and inspiring. And yet those of us that are time poor, which let's face it, is probably 95% of us, we look at that and think, I don't have time to do that. I'm lucky to get 20 minutes to myself, let alone an hour or two. This idea that there's what's deemed as almost a holy amount of time that we should spend with Jesus has some of us not giving any time at all, as we don't feel like we've got enough time that's worthy of God. And the third thing is our sense of worthiness. You know, sometimes it's almost like I get a glimpse of the evil that's inside of me. And I don't know if you relate to that or understand what I mean, but it's like sometimes I'll think something or I'll see a situation and my mind goes to a place that almost scares me. And I don't know where that thought came from or how my mind went there. I see myself for a moment without the Holy Spirit dwelling in me, and I realize my sinful human nature. I realize how unworthy I am of God, how unworthy I am to even step foot into his presence. Or the knowledge that I only come to him when I need something, that I'm not giving him the time that he deserves, makes me feel somewhat unworthy to attempt to spend any time with him at all. Our sense of unworthiness is used as a trap of the enemy to keep us from the presence of God. And what's so ironic about the place that so many of us find ourselves in, a place of busyness, a place of getting caught up with the task set before us, a place where the only time we give to God is when we need something, is that he loves us so much that he lavishes his grace, mercy, and goodness on us in those moments where we simply come into his presence. The irony is that we so often come out of those moments having received what we needed in the first place. You know, we live in a world of getting what we need in an instant, so much so that we begin to see God that way too. Even in preparing this message, I so needed clarity. I needed specific verses, and my mind was filled with this message, and yet I really struggled to bring it all together. And I'm sitting at my desk asking God to give me what I need, and once again, he just wants me to come and be with him. I was telling Craig about my frustrations on Tuesday because I was Googling Bible verses and I was just coming up empty. And it's almost like I was treating God like Google. I just wanted to type in or tell him what I needed and have him deliver it to me in a neat little package. Craig just ended up laughing at me, saying, "Can't you see what's happening?" And I realized that once again, the message that I was trying to deliver to other people was the exact message that Jesus was trying to say to me. He just wanted me to come to him, not because I needed anything, but because he wants my presence, not my performance. And once again, whilst worshipping him and being in his presence, he graciously gave me what I needed as well. So I want to look at how do we come into the presence of God? What are the things that we can do to actually come into that place? And the first thing I think is really quite simple, is to stop. To literally just stop. Just stop in whatever moment you have, whether it's an hour, 30 minutes or 15 minutes. Just stop what you're doing. Stop striving. Stop in the midst of your busyness and your to-do lists and just come to him. It may have been a long time since you've really felt the presence of God. It may have been a long time since you've been able to give him the time that he deserves. But thankfully, his desire for you has not weakened. He will hold nothing back from you. And Psalm 62 verse 1 says, "My soul waits in silence for God alone." When was the last time you felt that? You felt your soul just waiting in silence for what it is God wanted to say to you. And the second point is, once you've stopped, pray. Confess the clutter in your life. Tell God the tasks in your life that tire you. Be honest with him if you feel abandoned to an overwhelming job. Reveal to him what pulls you away from listening to him. Then consider God's ability compared to your own. Make room in your world, in your day, for the main course, for sitting at the feet of Jesus. In Matthew 11, 28 to 30, says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." When we only come to Jesus with our needs, when we soldier on with our eagerness to accomplish, our time poor schedules and our false view of our own worthiness, our souls become weary and burdened. We try and sustain ourselves until we can't take it anymore, and then we crumble before the feet of Jesus, only to get what we need to help us on our feet again and then start the cycle all over. Confess this way of life before the all-merciful Father and allow him to carry your burdens. And thirdly, once you've given him that burden, worship him. You know, when we open our mouths in worship, when we play an instrument in worship, when we dance in worship, when we use our gifts in worship, we place Jesus in his rightful place at the center of our lives. And he can't help but make his presence known to us. When we give ourselves over to the longing of our souls, being in the midst of God's presence brings life and joy and healing into our lives. Nehemiah 8:10 says, "For the joy of the Lord is your strength." His joy really does bring inexplicable strength. It's once again in his presence that our needs are met, that our spirits are refreshed, our strength is renewed. Restoration, healing, purpose, life and love are ours for the taking in his presence. I believe God is wanting to remind us, church, to call us away from our busyness, to assure us that all he wants is us, that he only wants our presence, not our performance, that he wants so much more than just moments where we present our needs, that he is more than just a Google search. We have become in this world, in this culture, Marthas instead of Marys, and he is gently and kindly helping us to see what's important. What is the main course of our lives? What is eternal? I was home by myself last Friday night, and normally I would like put on a movie and eat chocolate all night, taking advantage of having so much time to myself. But I was at a point where my soul was crying out to be in the presence of Jesus. So instead, I went into my study and I put on some worship music and fell before the feet of my King. During this time, I read a devotion from the book, Come Away, My Beloved, and I'd like to share it with you. It says, O my beloved, abide under the shelter of the lattice, for I have betrothed you to myself. And though you are sometimes indifferent toward me, my love for you is at all times as a flame of fire. My ardor never cools. My longing for your love and affection is deep and constant. Tarry not for an opportunity to have more time to be alone with me. Take it, though you leave the tasks at hand. Nothing will suffer. Things are of less importance than you think. Our time together is like a garden full of flowers, whereas the time you give to things is as a field full of stubble. I love you, and if you can always, as it were, feel my pulse beat, you will receive insight that will give you sustaining strength. I bore your sins and I wish to carry your burdens. You may take the gift of a light and merry heart, for my love dispels all fear and is a cure for every ill. Lay your head upon my chest and lose yourself in me. You will experience resurrection, life, and peace. The joy of the Lord will become your strength, and wells of salvation will be opened within you. When I read that, it was as though Jesus himself was speaking directly to me. It took for me to stop, to confess in prayer where I was at, and repent for neglecting my relationship with him, to enter into his presence with worship and allow my soul to let go of all of its worries and burdens, to trust that he alone is my strength, and to allow his presence to envelop me with his love and mercy. Being vulnerable before our God takes a heart of openness, a willingness to be still, and a moment where life just stops. There have been moments in me where it's all just seemed too hard. How can I get back to that place with Jesus? Where do I start? I knew that I was drawing back from him because it was easier. But in the midst of my weakness, God spoke his strength to me and he said, do not give up. He just wanted me to come to him. Psalm 62, verse 5 to 8 says, my soul, wait only upon God and silently submit to him, for my hope and expectation are from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense and my fortress. I shall not be moved. With God rests my salvation and my glory. He is my rock of unyielding strength and impenetrable hardness, and my refuge is in God. Trust in, lean on, rely on, and have confidence in him at all times. You people pour out your hearts before him. God is a refuge for us, a fortress and a high tower. Selah. And that's the Amplified version, and I love this version because with Selah at the end, it's to pause and calmly think of that, to stop. So church, we're going to take this moment now to actually stop. I've got a song, it's about 5 minutes that I'd like to play for you, and I'm going to ask that the house lights be turned off. And the words are going to be on the screen of what this song is saying. And I just want to encourage you in this moment to take this time as an opportunity to stop and to come before him confessing the clutter in your life, confessing why you haven't been spending time with him and what's drawing your attention away from him. To come before him confessing that you've been neglecting him and willing to take this time to come into his presence. I'm asking the lights to be turned off because I think there's something almost really personal about this, and I want you to feel comfortable in this moment and not feel like people are watching you or whatever. So if you want to stand in this moment, stand. If you want to fall to your knees, go to your knees. If you want to come down the front, come down the front. But as we play this, I really encourage you to listen to the words and take this moment to step into the presence of Jesus. If we can play that song now, please. The words of that song of "Through it all, Lord God, my eyes are on you," and for my soul to let go and trust that the waves and the winds still know his name, no matter what's been going on around me, no matter my circumstances, the waves and the wind still know his name, and declaring no matter what I'm feeling that it is well with my soul. Church, we're going to come into a time of worship now. We're going to sing, "I Will Exalt You." And if this is a place that you find yourselves in, where you're tired, you're burdened, you're weary, and you feel like it's been far too long since you've been in his presence, so how am I going to get back there? This is a moment where God wants to lavish his love on us, lavish his grace on us and his mercy. Despite our actions, despite what we've been doing, he finds us worthy and he wants our presence. So as we sing, I encourage you to come forward. I encourage you to come down the front. We're going to leave the lights off because I want to maintain this atmosphere. Open your hearts, church. Bring a spirit of willingness to hear from him this morning and what he wants to say to you, because he just wants you to come. He just wants you to come into his presence, not with agendas, not with to-do lists, but just to come and sit at his feet. So as we sing, as we worship together, come before the feet of the Almighty God. I'd love to pray with you, and there's others here that will pray with you. Don't miss this opportunity. Don't continue on your path of busyness, because everything you need, he has. And it's when we come before him humble and we come before him with an open heart, just wanting to be in relationship with him, that he so graciously gives us what we need anyway. So if I can invite you to stand, and we're going to sing.